I'm ready.
All right. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning into another episode of the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and with me today is one of our Stark City writers, Joe Bardalis.
Hey, how's everybody doing tonight?
And hey, Joe, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here.
So we were kind of wanting just to chew the fat a little about Stark City, and some of the previews we've been releasing are focused on characters. We kind of wanted to back up a little bit, and, you know, it's a setting, so let's talk about some of the setting elements for the neighborhoods. And Joe is working on, I'm sure everyone's got their favorites. One of my favorites is the Catacombs, which is what Joe's working on. And Joe, I mean, you and I have been trading emails about this and wiki posts about this for months now, but why don't you, you know, for the folks at home who haven't been inside our heads, why don't you,
that's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah, yeah. My parole officer says.
Yeah, so the neighborhood I've been working on for the Stark City project is called the Catacombs. And literally, the Catacombs is the underground of Stark City, and that's both literally and figuratively. It's sort of a criminal underground. There are criminals that actually live in the Catacombs. So it's a subterranean neighborhood, and it's actually built off of an old subway system that they were going to build in the 1930s in Stark City. And they ended up abandoning the project for various reasons that, well, I'll let you guys discover that when you see the product. But it was left abandoned. They had this entire underground structure, and they ended up building like an elevated L train in Stark City instead for mass transit. So they had this whole thing under there. And what happened was it eventually, you know, various criminal groups and stuff use it. It was linked into the subway system was linked into some other cool things, like an old mafia rum runner tunnels, bootlegger tunnels underneath the city. It also like had connections like to the sewer system, and there was a lot of infrastructure left over from the subway system that wasn't used. One of the neighborhoods, which actually is like a mockery of the streets above where criminals live. It's an old block of Stark City. It's now called Easy Street. And Easy Street was sort of covered over. It was in a low-lying area of Stark City. It's covered over. So they could put a subway tunnel through it. And they had condemned all the buildings. Well, there was a gangster that kind of controlled, well, one of the mafia gangsters that controls the area down there. He discovered this area and basically created a neighborhood for supervillains to live in. There's all kinds of everything from stores to criminal, to various nightclubs and casinos. And, you know, it's shady. It's not part of Stark City proper. There's certainly no police down there, but it's like a complete neighborhood. So that was actually inspired by a comic book, Incognito. It was actually the second part of that. There was actually an underground neighborhood like that called All Points Junction, which was sort of like an underground subway area where all the criminals lived that was kind of forgotten. And so everything kind of connects off of that, and all these underground systems from the sewers to the subways to Easy Street, which is the name of the buried street that's now the criminal neighborhood. All these things are kind of interlinked together, and ultimately it's like the Stark City Mafia, one of the big bosses who's sort of on the lam living down there. He's basically in charge of the whole thing. But there's a lot of cool things there. It's not just that. I've got some other things, a black market, all kinds of things that we've kind of put down there.
Cool. And Noah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, we could just talk about, I think the gangster you're talking about is Dominic Marinelli.
Yeah, Dominic Marinelli. He was basically, I don't know how much of the history I should go into. He basically, when superheroes sort of left the city, the big superheroes left the city in the 70s when they disappeared, we'll let you read about that in the actual book. He kind of took that as a young man to, you know, kind of make, it kind of emboldened him to, take on a life of crime, and he kind of rose almost like a you know, like a Teflon Don type through like the 70s and 80s as one of the biggest gangsters in Stark City proper, you know, before he went underground. And finally, he ends up having to disappear, go on the lam, and he does that by going into the old bootlegger tunnels, which the mafia still controls under the city, and that's when he kind of discovers the all the infrastructure down there. He discovers the lost city block that becomes Easy Street, the neighborhood that all the criminals live in, and sort of rebuilds his criminal empire now that he has to, you know, live underground and off the grid, so to speak. So.
Cool. Folks listening to Kickstarter, they might have noticed there's a colorful picture Dan did of kind of a robot type dressed up like a 1930s gangster with a Tommy gun. And that's actually a character from the Catacombs.
Yeah, that's a character Dan came up with that was really, I thought was really cool. But he's actually dates back to the 1920s during the bootlegger era when they first were building the bootlegger tunnels under the city, which they're called the Rum Run. I call it the Rum Run in the Catacombs. The mafia would use these the organized crime would use these tunnels under, you know, all the things to get booze into the city, as well as distribute booze and other contraband to various speakeasies and places around the city where during Prohibition. And they also used it to, you know, avoid the notice of the police or other rival gangs. So that's how that came about. But what the mafia did back then, which was really cool, was they hired a mad scientist villain to create them a robot to patrol the catacombs, sort of like when they weren't around and couldn't always be down there, to make sure there wasn't anyone who should be there. The robot ended up taking on the characteristics of the gangsters he'd be around, like their mannerisms, their speech patterns and stuff like that. Sort of like, "Yo, dirty rats," you know, that sort of thing. So, the gangsters kind of like ended up adopting him sort of as their, as one of their mascots. And rumor has it he's still around patrolling the area, so even to this day. So,
cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's like I said, this is my favorite neighborhood. Partly because Stark City's sort of a Chicago analog, and I've done a lot of reading, and one of my favorite eras in Chicago history is, you know, the bootlegger era, and there were some tunnels underneath Chicago, like the, you know, the downtown area, that were originally used for mail transportation back in the 20s. And they quickly got co-opted by bootleggers for, you know, transferring alcohol around in the during Prohibition. So, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the influences. I was reading a lot about that, and I actually watched online a couple of episodes of City Underground. I forget what it was called. It was a really great show that was on the History Channel where they would take you underground different cities like New York or Paris or, you know, different cities, London.
Paris has a really interesting underground.
Exactly, yeah. And so, you know, I kind of pulled a few ideas from all of these things. I mean, there's parts that are a little bit more New York-y because, you know, I lived in New York City most of my life, so there's a lot of that there, but it's also very Chicago influence. And also, I guess it was in Seattle they had the tunnels too. In Seattle they also have some. Shanghai tunnels or the gangs in Shanghai? Yeah, so that was kind of part of the influence of the neighborhood too. Like, cause there's like this whole neighborhood of like at least the first story of buildings that's covered over. I guess it was from an earthquake or something, and they buried it over. So the actual street became the underground tunnel, just like Easy Street. So I kind of try to put a little bit of everything in there, you know, but making it fit into the Stark City story, which is it's very Chicago-esque, but I wouldn't call it exactly Chicago. It's unique enough, but you can definitely see that it's Chicago is what the whole city is based on, which is nice because everything always seems to be New York or L.A. So, Yeah. At the time, the Windy City got its tribute.
Well, you know, growing up in the Midwest, you're always like, man, it'd be nice if we had some superheroes in the middle of the country besides, you know, the Great Lakes Avengers. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, I guess it seems the Ninja Turtles were based in Ohio or something, if you're the comics.
I think so, yeah, that's right. That's right. Weren't they in Cleveland, or...
Yeah, Cleveland needs superheroes, I think.
They do. Cleveland needs, you know, they've got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to protect there, so...
The one item we can think of any value in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's where I went first.
Cool, cool. So, like Joe mentioned, we've been working on this for months now. It's not going to be, you know, sometimes, you know, Kickstarters are regarded as, you know, hey, you're going to take your money, and then we'll get around to writing it at some point in the future. You know, there's been like a half dozen of us have been, you know, working on collaborating and writing this, stitching this, studying together for a couple months now. And we're looking at delivery date of January, and I'd say a good half of the book is, what wouldn't you say, Joe?
I'd say a good half of the book is in good shape to be published, and the rest is definitely getting there. I know my section is pretty much done, but, you know, there's little tweaks here and there. I think what people are realizing, we have been working on this before we announced the Kickstarter, which only has about 18 days left. This was a month-long Kickstarter, I think. What was it, 30 days? Or
45.
45 days. Yeah, we've only got about 18 days left. Before we even announced it, we've been working on this for several months together, behind the scenes, bringing people in as we went along. It's been this collaborative effort that's just, I think, really is going to show in the final product. A lot of people, because you don't see a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, we have an internal wiki that we all have access to where we're putting our material in, where you can borrow ideas from people. We kind of talk. We talk every day, I would say, on email. There's some kind of exchange where we're sharing ideas to try to make sure the stories integrate. Like, oh, that's a great idea, but I can use this in my neighborhood this way. And we got a nice framework to build things off of that Steve Perrin, who's doing the history of Stark City and sort of the timeline he put together. We're being able to pull stuff from the past because of that. And he's taking some of our ideas and integrating that into the history. And just the collaboration between everybody has been amazing. It's just, it's really going to shine. And it's nice to see that these things interlock so nicely together. Like, you could be reading one section and you'll get a little bit of the other section. But it's done in a great way, because one of the ways we build this Kickstarter, for those of you who've looked at the page or who have subscribed already, and we thank you so much for doing that, we said that it's kind of a modular thing. So if you wanted to use the catacombs in your home city with very minimal effort on your part, little tweaking, maybe a little location, you know, a little, you know, mix it up a little bit, you could definitely use these things a la carte, like each of these neighborhoods in your own thing. But at the same time, you can interconnect them to make the full Stark City, which, you know, to use as your setting as well. And the other thing that's going to be really great about this project, which is, I mean, if I wasn't involved in this, this is one of the things I would buy it for, just for this. Steve Kenson has put together these wonderful city and setting. They're really not just for cities. It's this setting creation system for icons, which, you know, it's based on things like the aspects that you see and everything. And it's sort of like that final piece in Icons. Like in the original Icons book, we got this chapter on how to build a team together. And we're also waiting on Team Up, and we hope everything's well, and Gareth will have that for us soon. But we did have team creation rules in the original book. Then we had like a nemesis villain creation in the Villainomicon. This is like the third part of that thing for collaborative world building between GMs and the players. That there's an opportunity, like as you know from those other two experiences, you're sitting with the other players and the GM, and you're sort of creating these setting elements together. Your team, your major villain, your nemesis. Well, now you've got something where you can create your setting together. And this is just phenomenal, because they're written in such a way with an emphasis on scale. And the default, obviously, is city, is scale. Because, you know, this is Stark City is a city setting source book as well. But you can build the neighborhood diner in your town with these rules. And at the same opposite end of the spectrum, you can build an entire galactic empire, you know, of different planets and things like that with these same rules. They're just really brilliant. And if I wasn't involved in this Kickstarter, I would want to buy in just for that alone. I mean, I think they're going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait till it comes out in January so I can start using it on my blog that I do, Just Add Heroes, kind of like how I do the Justice Wheels, different vehicles for things. I want to start building things like, oh, here's a neighborhood diner, here's this, here's that, bam, here's a corporation, boom. These are great. I think they really, really make this a real toolkit for setting, building, and icons, and that's that final piece of the puzzle for putting together a great icons campaign.
Yeah, I think Kenson's setting rules are really kind of the Marlon Brando cameo that kind of elevates the rest of the project.
I think so. Yes, it's definitely Jor-El showing up.
One question I've gotten from people is I want to know how many. We're going to release everything as PDFs first, and then we're going to have a POD print on demand compilation. Mm-hmm. And some folks have asked, well, how many PDFs are going to be, and how's that going to happen? The first PDF is going to be called Welcome to Stark City. It's going to have Steve Kenson setting rules. It's going to have the downtown neighborhood, which is called the Silver District, and it's going to have Steve Perrin's history. And then after that, every 2 weeks, there's four more neighborhood books. Each one's going to come out, 2 weeks after that. And I'm not going to give you an order because it'll depend on art and layout and that kind of thing. And if we can get some of these stretch goals met, we've got a series of adventures we're looking at to start releasing after that to kind of, flesh things out a little bit more and, give you, adventures for Stark City. So that's kind of the plan for that. One other question I've had on the Kickstarter that I want to address is that I use the phrases POD compilation and soft cover book kind of interchangeably on the rewards. That's my mistake. They're the same thing. So, when I say add $20 to get the POD book or get the soft cover, same damn thing. So there's only going to be that one. It's the compilation of all the PDFs, all of the neighborhood books, along with the initial release, Welcome to Stark City. So that's what's going on there.
Yeah, so you'll be getting the book from us, almost like sort of like chapters, but by neighborhood, by an introduction, and then the neighborhood books as PDFs that you can use individually. And then everything compiled together will be the soft cover 4-print book, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, it's gonna look good too.
Yeah,
the artist and Adrian Smithson layout, and he's a hell of a guy. So
yeah.
You know, so you start to feel sheepish after you've been pimping your own work for about 20 minutes. You start to feel like, I haven't talked about my own stuff now for kind of a while.
Yeah, I know. I feel weird. I can kind of talk. I have a way I can kind of talk about my own work, but it's really the work of others. I could talk about the couple of the Justice Wheels that just came out briefly.
Yeah, you've done some really good work on that if you want. We just released that one you wrote today.
Yeah, Bodhisattva, blah, blah, blah. I can't even pronounce it.
I'm going to try, but yeah, he's a character that Kirby Arinder came up with. He's kind of in the tradition of the Spirit of the Shadow, sort of a two-fisted pulp adventurer dressed up dapper-like, but what makes it interesting to mention is he's an enlightened mystic, sort of like if Alan Moore were to write Doctor Strange.
Yeah, most of this is Kirby. He deserves full credit for that. He was one of the patrons, I guess, on Justice Wheels.
Yep.
And this was his character, and it really is really cool. When I was working through that, I did some of the stats. I mean, he had given us stats, but I did a little tweaking here and there, and then I came up with the vehicle, the Vajra Mobile, for that. And I just kind of sort of edited what he had, but it was really, it's a very esoteric character. We ended up doing something a little different in this one. Normally you get in a Justice Wheels, for those of you who aren't familiar with them, you get the hero or a villain with his signature vehicle written up, like as a like with all the powers and features of the vehicle. But you also get like a variant, whether the opposite of what the character is mainly presented as, either a hero or a villain. So like if you have a hero, you get a villainous variant. We did a little something different in this one because he had this really cool idea, going back to the esoteric nature of the character, where Bodhi, I'm just going to call him Bodhi for short, he has this awareness of reality that we ended up making it as calling it an NPC option, because I'm not sure. I think a good role player could pull it off, but I think it might work a little better as an NPC. But obviously, you can do whatever you want with the character when it's yours. It just really was a really interesting twist to the character and his perception of reality. I'll leave it as a surprise. I won't spoil it, but I just thought that was brilliant. And Kirby really did it really is a cool character. So it was an honor to be able to have a small part in that. So, yeah. So I'm pimping a product that I worked on, but it's not by me. So how did that go? Mike, you still there?
Hey, sorry, I was on mute. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, if I was a publisher and this was a comic, I would try to implore the writer to shorten the name. But, it's Bodhi Vajra. Bodhi Vajra?
Vajra, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It's a really cool character. A little kind of, like I say, it's sort of like if Alan Moore had written Doctor Strange crossed with the Spirit. But he's got a floating car, which is why he's in Justice Wheels. And we should point out that, hey, we got those cool vehicle rules and chase rules and Justice Wheels that Daniel Gallant and myself wrote with a lot of consultation from Steve Kenson. So, those are fun. And it's a dollar. Yeah. So
yeah, it's a buck.
It's the most fun you can have for a dollar outside of Nevada. So I would, you know. Anyway, my pimping hand is getting tired, man.
So maybe
we need to wrap things up. Anything else you want to, tangents or random stuff you want to touch on before we call it a podcast?
Just want to thank everyone again who has contributed to the Kickstarter. We really appreciate it. If you've been sitting on the fence thinking about it, I think this is a great time to get in. We've got 18 days left. We are almost at our goal. We're very close now. So, I think you'll get a lot of use out of this book. Even if you don't use Stark setting per se, you will Stark City, the campaign setting per se, you will get a lot out of the material that's in there for your own game. So I think it's a good deal, really. Hey, $25 for a book, that's pretty good. And the PDFs are only 10, the whole collection of PDFs, if you don't want the print. It's a pretty good deal for some very talented people that I'm very lucky to be working with as the new guy. Like Steve Kenson, Steve Perrin, John Post, everybody that's involved in this. Dan, of course, Walt Robillard, everybody that's involved is just amazing. So.
And hey, to make this even more like a PBS pledge drive, while you and I were talking, a new pledge came in.
Awesome, awesome.
A guy with the handle of SurfMonkey01 just threw $25 at Stark City, so...
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
I will thank you in advance. I'll pretend we're listening to us on PBS that we weren't recording this earlier. So, thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
I think he just sensed our vibe and always moves. But sweet. All right. Well, hey, Joe. Let's wrap things up. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you, sir, for having me on again.
Hey, that's always a pleasure. And did we have a sign-off for this podcast, or were we just saying make mine BAMF, or did we?
We're just saying make mine BAMF. We said that last night when failed podcast, so I'm going to say it again.
We had an abortive podcast last night.
It was
the best podcast we've ever done. It was funny.
It was brilliant. We even had special guests like, Stan Lee stopped it. I mean, but unfortunately, it's disappeared in the.
The recording failed. I laughed. I cried. It became a part of me. But alas, it will never be heard. But
I loved it better than Cats.
Make mine BAMF, folks.
Make mine BAMF.
And we'll catch you next time. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.